Hi everyone, and welcome back to another episode. This is the last episode of a batch that I recorded at the end of 2023 and earlier this year, and as such will be the final episode of season 2. I've been working hard on recording all new episodes and making some minor changes under the hood that I'm excited to announce, but more on that later. For now, I'm Lige Morgan, and this is Boiled Over. In this episode, recorded this past April, I got the opportunity to chat with one of my favorite animators ever and dear friend, Dina Springer. I've been a huge fan of Dina's work for a while now, and couldn't have been more excited to hear all about her process, inspirations, and so much more. Without further ado, Dina, would you mind introducing yourself and talking a little bit about the work you make?
Yeah, I'm Dina. I'm a Chicago-based animator and illustrator. I like to make ethereal animations and freelance, and I've done studio work and editorial work, music videos, I've done books, and that's mostly my practice. Yeah.
A little bit of everything. And I think ethereal is probably the best word to describe your work. So I guess to begin here, how did you initially get started in animation, and what's made you stick with it through the years?
I remember probably since I was about, I don't know, I think like 4 or 5 years old, I wanted to do animation or work with cartoon. I just remember having a giant TV in my room, or in the living room, and we watched like Cartoon Network in the early 90s and like Nickelodeon. And that was just like quintessential. And I just known I wanted to work with cartoons. And then I didn't really start pursuing it until 2020. I did a little bit in undergrad, but I was too scared to like do it because I think I had this voice telling me I can't do it because it's not practical. Well, I went to DePaul in Chicago first for a quarter, but then I transferred into the RNC Chicago to do like film and animation and illustration. I did film and editing for like the first 2 years, and then I finally did animation my junior year, which is kind of late. I graduated, didn't have a complete film, did a bunch of life stuff and experience, and then 2020 hit, I lost my job. And it was the time when I really had to convert myself to like, ask myself like what made me happy, what did I actually want to do, and so I made a bunch of like small animations and illustrations, and my partner helped guide me into like figuring out what gives me pleasure and what makes me happy. And then because, you know, we were unemployed with the pandemic, I just basically spent a year as like a personal art residency. It was the best decision I've made, even though it was a really crazy world at the time.
Can you talk a little bit about like what you did in that year and how that kind of led to like where you are now?
I think during that year, so with like the like forced isolation, I focused a lot on like having good mental health and like physical health. I started going to like a private gym. Well, we worked out remotely with this gym, and it's just a community of people. And so like I did a lot of stuff for my physical health. We had a really strict routine. And so building that routine, just like building myself as a person physically and mentally, was like first foundational for the first 6 months. And then a lot also what I did was just kind of like, I started analyzing myself in terms of like the stuff I was like gravitating towards. Like I had all these like Pokemon picture books of like kind of like Where's Waldo and like other things that started like, I basically started collecting data points of what made me happy and what I was drawn to. And I started like tracing things because I was realizing I don't like character animating. And so like, what are these things I can use, like immediate tools that I can use to make things move? So I got instruction manuals. I got like foreign language books because I loved learning foreign languages growing up. And like from these like diagrams, I just felt compelled to trace them and recompose them in Photoshop to make an animation, or just like make a bunch of unfinished drawings or things that felt complete, or just like make as much as possible to figure out what felt right and what wasn't working and what was working, if that makes sense.
And so kind of exploring animation through, like you say tracing, I'm immediately thinking of like rotoscope in kind of like this like strange, weird way through these like diagrams and, you know, all these books that you were using. But what was that like? And like getting to see some of these images that were created for the sole purpose of being these still illustrations, then in movement through the process of you tracing or rotoscoping them.
I kind of felt like I found a cheat code. Like one of the reasons why I couldn't complete a film in undergrad is because I didn't like character animating. I'm a really big perfectionist, and like you have to be okay with making rough animations and all this stuff. I'm also really impatient. And so like finding things that were already kind of like keyed out for me and it got the idea across, like it felt great. And I could focus my energy in other parts of the animation then, of like compositing or editing or sound stuff.
That's something that's been really vital to me in my own animation practice as well. Taking out the parts of it that I don't want to do or don't feel like I'm super strong at or feel like they take a tremendous amount of time, and focusing on the things that kind of like do bring me joy, at least in the process, and like things that I feel like a lot stronger in my ability doing. And I don't know, I think it's really cool how like those choices to sometimes like make your life a little bit easier on yourself or like explore things through a different lens affect your style also like so dramatically. And I feel like you have a really unique style through your animation and your live action like filmmaking stuff and everything in between. And I was just wondering, because I feel like you use the medium of video to explore so many important and sometimes kind of rather abstract concepts, can you talk about how you use filmmaking as a tool for storytelling, and kind of delving deeper into these concepts and themes through the art of animation?
Yeah, I think kind of like tying into earlier, like when I had that like realization in 2020, like what gives me joy, I had to remind myself like all these rules that like were around me of like how I'm supposed to live are super arbitrary. The way I'm supposed to animate or create is really up to me. And there are rules around me and like how to live. I can tell a story like how I want to do it. And then there's no like wrong way to do things. They're just choices. There's no wrong choices, was what my friend told me. And like I really like using found footage, like vintage documentaries, and like repurpose them in a new way just to contrast like the animations. But I also think like I specifically want like old documentaries or old media because I think it helps highlight how arbitrary things are in terms of like our values and definitions, if that makes sense. Like the things that we define things now are different back then. And the way we perceive like time and mediums change. Like I think a lot about like comparing like mediums from like 1980, 2000, and like now. Because if you think, I had this realization watching 13 Going on 30. The film came out like, or like Mean Girls came out 20 years ago, but the way the medium
I can't think
looks,
about that.
right? It's fucking weird. But when if you're in the year 2004 watching Mean Girls 20 years ago, 1984, like photography and film looks super different. But that's the same time span from like today to Mean Girls. So like the way we perceive time through mediums, I think is kind of really interesting because that's constantly changing. So I kind of like doing that with like animation and filmmaking is kind of like blurring the lines of time, the way we perceive it, because it's all, I don't know, made up.
I love that, and I feel like that's also so apparent in your work, seeing stuff that feels, I guess, for like lack of a better word, but like stuff that feels kind of
No.
like vintage, and then stuff that does feel like much more modern, all kind of combined through all of these different mediums. And I feel like that's something that's kind of like always been present in your work for like as long as I've known you, as an animator. And I think the first time I saw your animations was when you were beginning work on your film Boys Clap Girls Dance. And I kept seeing these like incredible character loops popping up all over my Instagram feed. And that's, yeah, when I immediately became obsessed with your work. But was wondering if you could introduce this film for anyone who's listening who might not be familiar, and also talk a little bit about what your process was like for creating this.
Boys Clap, Girls Dance. It was completed like early 2022, but I was working on it from like the end of 2020 through all of 2021. And it's a really ethereal film. It's doesn't really have like a story to it, but it's basically, if I had to give it a plot point, about a girl who explores a weird space that's constantly shifting around her and like basically is having an identity crisis, because I was having an identity crisis at the time. But I pull a lot of like simple loops from like old children's illustrations from the 50s and recompose things in a new way. I like the idea of loops just because of like, A, I mean, with these instruction manuals, that's all I'm given is like very simple actions. So I recompose it, but also just kind of like it helps kind of reinforce the idea of like being in a really strict framework. And it's also really fun to put these bodies together and seeing like these new forms created from it. So you kind of get a collective kind of being from a billion different people, which is like, parades or like cheerleading kind of have that.
From like a very technical standpoint, how are you going about creating loops from the instruction manuals? I know like you briefly mentioned like this art or process of like tracing them, but going like a little bit deeper into that, they feel so seamless seeing them in the animation that like it's hard to believe that like there aren't any like in-betweens or anything like that. And like,
I
yeah,
know,
just
right?
curious what the process, if you can dive like a little bit into the technicalities of what it looks like.
So when I trace like these diagrams, I'll recompose them into Photoshop to have a very simple like GIF animation. And when I bring them in After Effects, so I'll mess with the time remap and just have things like staggered over and over again. So like the fact that they're staggered, their bodies create these giant waves of movements. And then I'll add like echo or like other After Effects stuff to kind of like blend their bodies more together.
You mentioned the character in this film kind of having an identity crisis because you were having an identity crisis at the time. And I'm curious if you can talk a little bit about kind of the autobiographical nature of this film and the themes that you explored through it while working on it.
Yeah, I think the one scene that really gets to me is when she's in the mirror and like it's like I know it's like cliche, but like in her face is just like being projected onto. I just like it comes from like being biracial. Like I always wanted to be connected to my Chinese like heritage, but it's been kind of hard because I grew up in Chicago, but then we moved out of it to like a country area in like southern Illinois. So like there's no community and like my mom didn't really pass things down. So like I don't know, I always longed to connect to that side, but I always felt isolated from it because I didn't really speak the language that much. I'm a minority dialect instead of Mandarin, so like no one speaks it. And then I don't pass as Asian, so like I was constantly being othered by my own community or just like from like the white community, just constantly othered. And I think also up until probably my early 20s, I was seeing myself through the eyes of other people instead of my own. So when you're doing that, your face is constantly shifting because you're constantly seeing, you're trying to see yourself through like the new context you exist in. So like I think that ends up being really chaotic. And so when 2020 hit, I had that realization. I'm like, I need to see myself and like have my own center of gravity in order to move throughout the world. And it's okay, like being ambiguous to everyone. You're never gonna, it's just being okay with that. And also like my partner is from Korea. And he's helped me like build my own sense of like agency with my Asian American identity. And I feel really proud of it because I feel like he's the only person to help see me for who I am and accept that like I may look different, but it's still mine. I can claim it in a way and still be respectful towards it. And yeah, I don't know. Just also being like a woman. I know, right?
That's so beautiful. And I mean, thank you so much for sharing that. Also, I
Thanks.
mean, it's so cool that animation can kind of be like a medium and an outlet for all of these things. And also creating such a beautiful narrative that you represent, and to use your own words, such like an ethereal kind of like abstract, beautiful way that I feel like so many people who watch that can still kind of connect to or understand at least what the film is about. Changing the subject a little bit to kind of like more current work that you've been working on. I've been obsessed with the visualizers that you've been posting recently for Seeking Balance, but was wondering if you'd mind talking a little bit about this project that you've been working on and kind of just how these loops come to be.
Yeah, I think this is like where it's kind of fun with like freelancing, which I'm sure like you or like other folks know where I didn't make a bunch of content, and while there wasn't a huge budget, he gave me so much creative freedom. So it was just I made a bunch. I've been really into like Fantasia and just kind of like that aesthetic and like
Oh, I feel
mirrored
like that
floral scenes.
totally checks out now that you
Does
said that.
it? Okay, cool. I'm
Oh, I
obsessed with
love
it right
that.
now. Early Disney is like problematic, but also I love some of their work. Also, like Kingdom Hearts, huge inspiration as
Totally.
a kid. All the glow. But yeah, for like the with Seeking Balance, it's just been like I've been really thinking about like just floral themes and just like constantly looping. and like cycling. It's just like super meditative. It's a very simple loop to construct. I've also been thinking about like, again, like how we perceive time. I think Gil, my partner, talks about how, I don't know if it's for sure, but like in some Eastern like perspectives, the way they perceive time isn't like a line, like it's not linear, but instead it's a spiral. So like each time we like go farther and farther out of the spiral, we'll like encounter the same thing or same experiences, but with a new perspective. So I've been thinking a lot about that.
Really cool.
And I guess it's coming out. Yeah, it's fun. It's cool. It's fun. Yeah, I love it.
I am a big fan of these. And yeah, I mean, I think also just in watching a lot of these the other day, I feel like they are so mesmerizing and so perfect for, you know, the project that you did them for, just because the nature of the loops is so seamless. And I was just wondering if, and I feel like you did kind of just touch on this a little bit, but maybe if you'd be willing to dive deeper into the importance of loops to you, and what they mean in the context of your work.
I think, I wonder if it's like just having a short attention span a little bit, but also I think for me in my process, it's hard to think of like the bigger picture. And so like I like making loops or small contained things because they're kind of like data points for something bigger. So like, yeah, the more you make, the more you can figure out like you can, well, the more you can analyze about yourself and your practice and like what you're looking at and reflect upon. So I think just it helps with kind of just that and just like building a larger practice. I've been trying to shift my mindset towards like your like personal art practice is kind of like the more data points you have, the more you're able to create your path moving forward, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't, I try to combine like my art practice with my life practice. And so if I'm not taking care of myself, my art practice isn't going to take care of itself either.
I think that's also something that gets lost on most animators. And it makes me really happy to hear that that's kind of hopefully more of a priority for you. And do you think you could just like briefly talk a little bit about kind of like having that balance and finding that balance and maintaining that balance, and what that's like for you?
For me, for someone who's like just generally a really anxious person, I like to think of myself as like chaotic lawful. I know that's not a thing on the D&D chart. Like I'm really chaotic inside, but I need structure to impose on it. Otherwise, I will go crazy.
I love that and can definitely relate.
Right? So like I really need a routine for myself. I also just like having to go out to like work out or go on a walk helps ground myself a lot because I'm in my head all the time. There's this book called How to Do Nothing. I forgot her name. It was like something Odell. It's iconic. In the early parts of the book, like I think it's in the prologue or whatever, in the introduction, she talks about this like I think it's an old Chinese proverb, but basically there's a lumberjack in the woods and there's this really fucked up looking gnarled tree and he's like, this isn't useful to me, so I'm not going to cut it down. He ends up cutting down all the other trees in the woods and the last thing that's surviving is the tree that isn't useful for the lumberjack. So it's kind of questions of like productivity and like having to put out like output stuff for other people all the time and like all the resources being gone. Instead of like your art practice being a form of a productivity, she kind of reframes it as a form of like self-maintenance. And instead of like outputting and production, I try to think of like my life practice and my art practice as like a garden where I'll come over here when I need something and water it, put some stuff over here if I need it. Just like constantly checking myself of like where I'm at and how to maintain it. Like if I need a break, I need to honor it. Is my body feeling okay? I need to do this. Just like remembering that like it's not about the end, but it's about the process of making and process of enjoying and maintaining that joy as much as you can. Because the better you are, the better your work will be. I try to remind myself that like Instagram, I mean the obviously the format is about, you know, product and pushing your product and money and maintaining our attention. And which she actually directly talks about in her book, but I try to reframe it as like this is an archive of my process. So like just seeing the progression of everything, seeing how it'll go and like not to take it too seriously. It makes some things may pop, some things don't pop, and that's okay and it doesn't mean anything. But I also try to prioritize like the connections it brings me to and like the community it brings. I think that's the best way to look at it because otherwise it's constantly like a losing game. Like no one's ever happy on there.
Yeah, it's kind of like a necessary evil, I feel like.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, kind of prioritizing what you do get out of it and how you handle your relationship with it, in a healthier way, kind of, I think, like you're describing, I think is really important. I'm curious, just kind of in the world of Dina and all of your work and all that you do. There haven't been many guests on this podcast that do editorial work. And I think that your work in that field is both incredibly strong but equally beautiful. And was just curious if you could talk a little bit about this editorial work that you do and your experiences with that side of the animation world.
I like it. It's been fun. I've always wanted, probably as a kid, to do like a dream, do like something for the New York Times. It's cool to see it exist in a new context, but it's been really cool because it's funny because it's all connected through social media. Like that's how art directors find us. But I like it just because you have to really work under like a lot of constraints. And I don't think I've made everything that's been great, but I've also learned that like simpler the better. I tend to overthink things and make overcomplicated or like indirect, I think, illustration. And the cool thing with editorial is it has to be direct and it has to tell the idea and message straight to the point. So
Right.
it's a cool way of going on the other side of the spectrum of like actually feeding the audience like what they want, what they need, rather than try to hide it. The few times I've had it, it's just been like, hi, we need this the Friday, we need this by Monday. And so I'll be like hustling over the weekend. I think it's just a really fast turnaround. And so you have to be on your game and be available. And I think good art directors want someone who they can really collaborate with really quickly and just get it. I'm a really slow worker, so those have been really great exercises of like really speeding it up. And it's funny because it's all about product.
Right.
But again, it's a spectrum. So like just a matter of like mixing and matching, and like if you have to put out product, how to like maintain your energy while you're doing that and letting things go also.
I'm sure it's an interesting balance as a perfectionist as well.
Yeah. Sorry. Oh my gosh.
So much beautiful work over like so many different fields. We talked a little bit about kind of like style combination. And I feel like this is something that plays across kind of like all of your work, whether that be short form, kind of like longer form, GIFs, whatever. But I was wondering kind of what drew you to mixed medium video in the first place, and how did you start mixing all of these mediums, kind of to begin with?
I was starting Boys Clap Girls Dance, and it was going to be, I think, all animated. And then my partner was like, he just has a really good intuition. He's naturally a teacher, and he used to be a painter. He's got the mind of an artist, but also a programmer. But he just suggested, like, if you repurpose video, I think it'll be more visually interesting and conceptually. And I didn't believe him until like maybe 6 months into the project, and then I did it. And like when I did do that, it felt more painterly in a way once I composed it in After Effects, and it's just a nice conceptual contrast from the animations because film and animation are constantly like in dialogue with each other. Like for me, I'm a really big film buff, I feel like more than an animation buff in some ways, just because like I like looking at cinematography and like how filmmakers traditionally tell a story. And also with my love for like foreign languages, it's really cool to see like how people like put things together in a new way with like their vocabulary. Like I'm not a good traditional storyteller, but it is really fun to analyze things like that within a film and then see how I can bring that into animation with like editing. It's cool because like when you have a traditional filmmaker or a traditional animator, the way you're gonna tell a story is gonna be super different with editing and composing. I feel like, who is it, Sean Buckaloo, and what's the other guy? Only did Scavengers.
Just Bennett.
Yeah, they're really good people, I think, who do a great job of combining film and animation, like a 1-to-1 ratio, but also like honor animation also.
Right. With those particular two examples, I feel like there's so much, even in like the little shorts that they post on Instagram,
Oh my God.
it feels like I'm like watching something that was filmed through a camera, and it's like all
Right?
2D animation. And I feel like that's something you get a lot with like 3D animation, that feeling, because you're like throwing a camera in the scene and kind of like able to control it. But like there's clearly so much cinematic influence there.
Yeah, it's cool. I've been like obsessed with them. With my new film, I'm like starting. I'm like really inspired by it. I never watched The Shining fully through because I'm a baby. But I've been obsessed with like The Shining cinematography and just like thinking a lot about composing. And I also want to have more of an ethereal, scary nature to it. That I don't have typically. Like, I feel like I'm, you remember Kingdom Hearts 1? I know it's not a film, but it's just, it, there's something so dark about it. Actually, when I was like first playing it, when I was like 8 years old, I'd play it and then I'd stop playing because I get scared and be too anxious.
I think ethereal scary is a great vibe to go for.
I want it.
Shifting notes a little bit, but also I
Yeah.
guess staying kind of on track. When working on these films, and creating, and I guess it sounds like you're working on something now or kind of starting to, what does your process generally look like from start to finish?
I'm a really big mood boarder, so I have this app called Milanote. It's kind of like Figma, but you can play GIFs and make it messier. So like I really love going to archives on the internet with like free images or like Pinterest and just like finding all these really fun images and put them together in a way where I can tell a story. Like I'm really drawn to finding these patterns and seeing them coexist in different ways. Like right now, for this film, I'm really hypnotized by like Alice in Wonderland and Sleeping Beauty. I'm really obsessed with Sleeping Beauty and like Snow White because I like this idea of like I'm like really stuck on the image of her being compelled to touch like the sewing machine. Just I've been thinking a lot about hypnosis and magic in a way that's like a form of control for women, but in a form of control that's like very indirect and unseen, and it's just like compelling. And so I have a bunch of these images that explore that idea through like symbolism or literal ways, and I'm connecting them through those patterns, and then as well as like trying to sequence them in a way in a story I can tell.
Are these images that might end up in the final film as well?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So like for Boys Clap Girls Dance, I had a lot of images of like a broken face in different ways, like kind of like puzzled together or distorted. So like I end up getting stuck on images I see, and I'm like, how can I recreate this in a way that works for me? In a way that I want to tell it and reshape it. So it's kind of like building that vocabulary for the new film and putting it in a new sentence in a way that makes sense for me, myself. I think my strongest point is like I'm really good at art directing and like building my vision. But in terms of how to get there, like I don't know if most animators have it, I'm sure, but like concept to like production is always the hardest part. Like, how do I get all these images into a story? I guess that right now I'm pulling from the mood board, like the very strong images that I see. And once I sequence them in a story that makes sense, but there's no words, I get a Word doc and I pull the image and tell the story with that. And so like I'm slowly building a script from that because like I'm drawn to these images and like how can I tell a story? And this is the biggest challenge with this film. I think it is going to be narrative, but I also want it to be, I think the closest thing will probably be like Cat Soup, Yuasa Masaki.
Cool.
That's kind of the vibe I want.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Oh my God. Yeah, I'm excited.
In terms of like when you're like actually like doing the animation, like tracing these drawings, compositing them in programs, creating the like loops and everything, what kind of tools or programs are you using for that?
I use like all the Adobe stuff. After Effects is my baby. So I do a lot of After Effects and Photoshop and like some Illustrator to get really crisp lines.
Is that where you're doing the tracing?
Yeah, I do the tracing in Adobe Illustrator, then I'll color in like Photoshop and compose it in After Effects for the final touch up.
And then are you keeping the layers as vector throughout the whole process?
I make them really big, so they're not, because I whenever I get into Photoshop, they're not vectors anymore, but because they're big, they'll still stay nice.
In terms of like sound and music, how do these things play into your films, and how much of a hand do you have in that part of the process?
For like the smaller like little things on Instagram, like the small loops, I make those first and then I just go around like the internet searching for free music that or free sound effects and stuff that match it. And for Boys Clap Girls Dance, the first half of it, I was obsessed with this song from the Ottawa Film Festival, Ottawa International Animation Festival from like the 70s. It's a promo. And I just had to have it. There was nothing else I could use. So I used it with permission and was able to like I animated the images and then I edited and from Premiere to it.
How did you even go about getting permission for something like that?
You just ask, it's from the 70s, and then I'm like, hi, making this. Is there like just I did that. We just asked them. They're like, yeah, sure. Because
The
it's
creator
so
of the
niche.
song?
Yeah, actually we did talk to him. That was really fucking cool. He's just this old Montreal guy who barely speaks English. We got his blessing and I geeked out.
Oh my gosh, that's incredible. Was he able to see
Yeah.
the final film?
I don't think so because he doesn't have internet. He's just an old man, but he's like a synth master, and like we got his connection through the National Film Board of Canada. It's just a fun process of going around it. Yeah, in the second half of the film, I wanted to get it composed and scored, but we didn't have that in the budget. So my producer found these really cool DJs in South Korea, and this one song actually just matched the beats I wanted perfectly,
Amazing.
and it just worked out.
Working with kind of some of these more recent loops that you've been doing for like seeking balance and stuff, I'm assuming they provide the audio for that.
Yeah, and so when I listen to audio, there's just like I've always wanted to be a musician, but I'm just like really shit at making music. So like being able to like animate to it, I'll just like get really important points and just mark that in the animation somehow. In terms of making work, I like having like for this new film, I have a very specific playlist in terms of mood and ambience that I want. So that kind of builds the world foundationally.
Is that a part of the mood board process, I guess?
Yeah. Like I have
Cool.
this entire like gothic, like I don't sorry, like synth gothic music. Like gothic as in like church music gothic, like
Oh,
organ.
cool. Oh, I love that. I want that
Yeah.
playlist. You should release it like with the film.
That'd be sweet.
And then I guess kind of like tying into all of this, then when working on music videos, what's your process like for crafting the idea there? Because you're being supplied with a song already. I'm assuming most of the time, like lyrics or something as well. And yeah, just wondering kind of like how often does an artist come to you with an idea? You get to craft your own entirely, or I guess maybe more of a collaboration between the two.
Yeah, I think I get a lot of creative freedom with the music videos, and like I try to think a lot about the artists themselves. Like I like to talk to them, get their inspiration, their research, and then from that I gather a mood board. And like their lyrics and stuff. It's just like really intuitive and very open. So long. But for the Gengar music video, I was basically hired out just to do this one scene. And like they went crazy with it and it just matched. Whereas like stuff for Salamanda or Hinako Omori, I just had like total creative freedom with it and just did whatever I wanted. And they were down with it. So it's people who match the vibe, I think, for the most part.
Cool. In terms of like when you do get total creative freedom, how much do lyrics end up playing into like the visual content of a music video for you, versus kind of just the vibe of the song?
Very little as of recently, just because I try to get the general mood from the lyrics and the ideas from it, and then from there I abstract it in a way that matches with the images. Otherwise, I put lyrics very secondary and just match to the beat and like the main backbone of it.
You mentioned the video for Gengar, and kind of just as with all of your other work, I think it's like such a masterful execution of combining styles and mediums. You mentioned that you were kind of just hired to do this one scene for it, or this one part, but I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about this video and kind of your process and what it was like mixing footage and animation on this project.
It was really fun. Like, it basically, I was good. I could have had more creative freedom, but I was just limited with other things. But the director, just like, we just, I think, saw each other's vision super well, and things just like really lined up. And so, like, he basically adapted my work for the music video, and it just kind of blended together through his vision. And so that was kind of really nice to feel seen by another artist who can take your work and put it into context and honor that too. It was super collaborative because he had a mood board and everything, and I just accommodated. So it was a back and forth.
Oh, that sounds super fun.
Yeah, it's cool when it vibes, you know?
Yeah, and like it all feels very much like it fits stylistically, like super cohesive. I'm curious kind of if you sketch at all, and if so, how do you find that affects your animation process?
I used to be a really big sketcher and like I used to love drawing, and now I'm just kind of I just thumbnail at this point, and I may like I'm for this film I'm just like developing characters and scenes. I'll like really commit to it. Otherwise, like I feel like sketching is just foundation, and I used to be in love with drawing, but now I see it as much more, it's more of like a stepping stone towards a bigger idea. Like I'd rather be in After Effects composing that image rather than drawing it out.
I feel the same way. I have like a really
Right.
difficult time with sketching, and it's something that I want to do more. It just feels almost like difficult justifying to myself, which I shouldn't need to do. But I feel the same way. It's like with that time, I would rather be in After Effects, kind of like playing around with stuff and making stuff move, rather
No,
than,
100%.
yeah, I don't know. In terms of generally kind of your process. I'm curious if it looks different between working on client work and working on personal projects. I'm assuming with like some of the editorial stuff, it's very different depending on like timeline and who you're working with versus like some of the like music video stuff that you do. But curious kind of like how that all differs from personal projects when you're working on them just for yourself.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's kind of nice to be given client work just because I think with my own projects, I don't have those limitations. And so it's nice to have those constraints of like having to accommodate someone else and seeing how I can fit into that puzzle. It's obviously like a spectrum. Like it is nice to have client work where I don't have to think and I just get paid and just like do the thing versus like having total creative freedom but not a lot of budget is like it can be exhausting creatively. I feel like it's the same process. Like it's all about like trying to understand like what the bigger thing is and trying to translate that into an idea through like mood boarding and researching, kind of like with music
Right.
videos.
That makes sense. I'm curious if you have a favorite project you've ever gotten to work on for a client. And if so, what would that be and why?
I think my favorite one was last year where it was so random, but I was working with this production company based in like Northern Ireland and in Scotland, and it was like funded by the government, so it paid well. And it was a fun project also. Like we had creative freedom with it too. I was working with this other illustrator and we had to make seven different animated posters for songs about anarchy written by children. It was
Incredible.
so cool. So like yeah, it was cool. And like it was put up in the gallery and it was just cool because like the production company was super sweet and like the product, I don't think like fit for social media, but it was just really fun to like work with an artist where we vibe so well. It was really tough, but like it was just, I think it's my favorite project to work on in a larger like environment because I don't usually get to work with stuff with these all these nice elephants.
Right. It
Yeah.
seems like this was kind of also more of a collaborative project then as well.
Yeah. It's kind of nice because she did most of the illustrations and she did, I think, all of the illustrations, but I was able to compose it into animation to give it my touch. So realizing the energy of like, if I don't put it here, I can put it here instead. And that was really nice.
Also, kind of going off of collaboration, I was wondering if you could talk about what it's like working with a producer or a little bit of a larger team on an animation.
It's kind of nice. Just, I like it just because it helps. Again, like what it gives you the boundaries on how to like manage the things you're given. It's just been really nice just to learn from other people like their process. So I like if I'm working with a producer or like an art director, I like to see what they're doing and how they're thinking and how I can translate that to my own later on. And just like even though it is collaborative, I'm giving some things off. I'm always trying to learn from other people so that way I can stay afloat in different situations as I go forward.
Right. And then in terms of like working with people on like your own projects, what's that been like for you and like developing those relationships and films and festivals and kind of like all of
Yeah.
that side of the world as well?
I think it's been a cool learning curve. I think I learned a lot through Boys Club Girls Dance because I was working with my producer, but he's also a family member who's like 20 years older than me. So like I've learned a lot through him and it's like I do want to be a leader, but it was kind of scary taking that on as I've never done that before, but like moving forward, it's hard because I'm scared of like I'm naturally a really big people pleaser, but I also want to get my vision ideas across. So it's really hard trying to be like the nice guy when really, things need to get done and things need to be done in a certain way. And like I have the agency and voice and I need to use it. So I'm constantly fighting myself. But it's been really cool to work on the film and be able to like work with people who also believe in the vision and just like want to be a part of something. I feel really honored a lot of the time, actually.
Oh, that's so cool and like
Yeah.
so heartwarming to feel like your animation also has kind of like a family behind it as well.
It's really cool.
Yeah, I love that. Oh. You've mentioned a couple times and kind of brought up this film that you're working on currently, but I was wondering if you've got anything that you're working on now or anything that you'd want to share about any sort of projects coming up. I'm very eager to hear about this film that you have in the works.
For the film, I'm really excited about it. It's basically, I guess, like a lot of my practice is about like taking pre-existing media and repurposing it in a way through my own eyes. And so like I'm trying to take Alice in Wonderland because it's a story that's been like recycled over and over again, but I kind of want to combine it with like Henry Darger kind of illustrations and just like have like a bunch of little girls at war with each other. So like I want to bring Henry Darger into it just because he's really cool with like he brings little girls on the same level as adult men because they're in a giant war together. And so I want to have something that kind of reflects that, but also has like just a darker sense underneath everything. So far, the working title is like The Realms of the Unreal, which is based on Henry Darger's own like work, but it's ethereal and it's kind of spooky, but it's going to be about a young girl who's probably in her teens, just kind of like getting lost in a space that's kind of different.
Oh, cool. I'm so excited. Again, with the ethereal spooky, like I
Yeah, I want it to be spooky through the spaces. That's what I really want to do.
Cool. What are you imagining like some of these spaces as, if you feel comfortable sharing at this point?
Yeah, I think a lot of like domestic spaces and like a giant panorama with like these crazy tile pattern flooring. I want to go through the spaces kind of like through an M.C. Escher kind of like vibe where the tiles like kind of transform as you go throughout.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, I also just want like a bunch of like large children kind of occupying it too, and like ghosts. I don't know.
Oh,
That's
cool.
like the images I have. It's otherwise I'm working on a little like animation promo for Zach Bryan, who's a country singer. It'll be playing live when he's performing at a football stadium. And I'm also working with Hobbs, which is a studio in Detroit, on a small little intern project I had with them forever ago. So a little bit of everything.
A little bit of everything. I cannot wait for this film. And do you have any idea or like a rough timeline of when we would maybe be able to see it eventually?
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping to get most of it started by the end of the year. I meet with a group of animators every month, and we do like crits in a way to help us be held accountable. But I'm hoping by next summer I'll have it out.
Oh,
That's
I
ambitious,
can't
though.
wait. And then we just have a couple of questions left here. But I was wondering kind of who or what are some of your biggest inspirations and influences?
Right now, I think Agnès Varda's film Cleo 9 to 5 was a huge inspiration for me. Just iconic. Henry Darger is a really great influence. He's also a Chicago like outsider artist. Prit Parn and Susan Pitt,
Of
really big
course.
inspirations. I know Ralph Bakshi really fucking sucks as a person and his work is problematic, but I do like his use of mixed media, especially in Heavy Traffic. And also like children's illustrators like Seymour Schwast. Remy Charlotte is a really big one. So like a lot of like early like 60s illustrations, like they're kind of psychedelic, kind of like with like Yellow Submarine. There's a huge like range of illustrators that live in that bubble that I'm really interested in also.
I'm just curious, the cartoons that you were watching when growing up, you said like you kind of knew from a very early age that you wanted to be an animator. And so I'm curious, like, on Nickelodeon Cartoon Network, when you were kind of growing up watching these shows, realizing that this was what you wanted to do, what were you watching then?
Who's that Hungarian animator, Klasky Csupo?
Oh, I have no
The one who
idea.
did Rugrats. I cannot say his name.
Oh,
Like, he's really great.
yeah.
I cannot say his name, but like, I love all those ugly animations in the early 90s and like Courage the Cowardly Dog. Like, I don't think this stuff exactly looks like my work, but I just grew up with a ton of like Nickelodeon, like Real Monsters, SOBY Ginger, and just like all that
The
stuff. They're
best.
kind of ugly, which is cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like stuff is like so hyper polished now that it's really lost that kind of like terrifying ugliness of
Yeah.
like the 90s and early 2000s.
I think the one thing I like about early 90s cartoons is they're kind of adult in a lot of different ways that I don't think that kind of disappeared until Adventure Time came back. Like trusting kids with these like difficult topics is like a really big thing I love about like animation.
Definitely. And also, I feel like hiding so many jokes in there for the, like the parents of these kids who
Oh
are
yeah.
watching the animation with them,
Totally.
which again, I feel like gets missed a lot nowadays. Yeah, I don't know. That's it's so fun to think about like little young Dina just like watching these shows being like, that's gonna be me one day. Like,
Yeah, right.
okay. And then, yeah, I guess kind of the last question I always ask at the end of the podcast is just if there's one piece of advice you could share with aspiring animators or your past self who was just kind of starting out with animation, what would that be?
I think basically do what feels good, reflect a lot on like what makes you happy and what doesn't make you happy and like why, and also like take care of yourself in a way that's not too indulgent. Like I would say just like maintain your garden. Like figure out what the garden looks like. Let's figure out what maintenance looks like and less about productivity and just like enjoying and being in that moment to build that voice. And Yeah, be okay with failure because each failure or each like thing that doesn't look right, as long as it's done, it's a data point to move forward.
I think that that's a perfect note to end on and kind of sums up everything we've been talking about this whole time.
Sweet. Yay.
Just of, yeah, taking care of yourself and finding the ways in which you need to kind of nurture your own garden. And a perfect note to end on here, I think.
Sweet. Well, thanks so much for having me. I really
Oh my
appreciate
God.
it.
Thank you so much for taking the time. Again, just been wanting to talk to you forever on the podcast. And so super happy we were kind of finally able to do this. But thank you so much, Dina.
Yeah, sweet. Thanks, Lige. Appreciate it.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode. As I noted at the beginning, for those paying attention, this will be the last episode of Boiled Over Season 2. I have a new batch of interviews that I'm working on recording, and I'm trying to streamline this whole process as much as I can in hopes to get more than just a few episodes out each year, but we'll see. I'm super excited to share everything that I have planned with you soon, and as always, thank you so much for continuing to listen and support this podcast. It really does mean the world to me. Until next time, I'm Lige Morgan, and this is Boiled Over.